Hey, how are you? Welcome to the Football Diary podcast. It's International Week. I'm with Dave to react to England's 1-0 loss to Brazil at Wembley. Everything from Endrick to Enteri Konsa, from Walker to Wendell. We've got it covered. Dave, how are you, mate, after that performance? Feeling pretty pumped for the Euros?
Oh, yeah, we look unstoppable. Absolutely.
It's an international friendly, and I know it's always like a difficult game to analyse, really, and to see where England are in terms of their prep for the Euros. But as far as a performance goes, what did you make of it? England didn't score, first of all. And I think with the kind of attacking talent we had on display, with the exception of obviously no Bukayo Saka, no Harry Kane, still a very good attacking lineup, wasn't it? So I'm just trying to figure out why England didn't score in that game, because we had pretty much the majority of possession. And I think on the majority of the game, Brazil defended, you know, didn't they, for the most part? They weren't going forward apart from on counters. So why couldn't England find the back of the net, do you reckon?
I think it's quite hard to analyse the overall balance of the game. Obviously, you mentioned England, quite a bit of possession, but only threatening moments. I think early on in the game, they had opportunities, particularly from set pieces. Phil Foden operating on that right-hand side, off of that right. We know he likes to operate more central, but we also know that Jude Bellingham likes to sort of occupy that same sort of position as well. So I think it's always difficult. I've always wondered myself whether they kind of almost get in each other's way a little bit at times, because they love to operate in that central area. And at times, obviously, Bellingham was sort of drift over to the left as well, which we did see him do quite a lot in this game. But also, we saw a lot of players playing together who not used to, like, obviously Watkins obviously had that striker's role and had a couple of really good opportunities, probably should have scored one of them. But he's a completely different player altogether as Harry Kane. And I think they did miss that link man, somebody kind of dropping in to that hole. But then also, if you've got Harry Kane in the team, you also need your forwards, your inside forwards that can run in behind. And you need a player with the ilk of Bukayo Saka, or I think you need probably someone like Marcus Rashford, who are going to make those runs in behind. And it was always almost a little bit mishmash. I think we struggled really to kind of put any sort of serious pieces of play together.
Yeah, I felt like we put the handbrake on a few times when we were going forward. And I think with someone like Saka in the team, you can tell he doesn't operate like that. He goes straight in, doesn't he, for the space and tries to find the moment to put the ball in. And Harry Kane's one of those like brilliant space invaders as well, isn't he? He knows where the ball's going to go, especially him and Saka's link-up is usually pretty good. Obviously, Watkins hasn't got that kind of link with any of these players in the team. So that was inevitable in some ways. But he got the full 90 minutes here. He did have one golden chance, didn't he, that I reckon he should have put away, but blazed it over the bar. I think he was leaning back as he hit the shot. And I think he'll probably look at that and go, that was my chance to make my mark. And he probably won't get a chance now with one more friendly to go. It might be Ivan Toney's turn. But do you think Watkins will be happy with this performance?
I think he was a little slightly unlucky. I think his touch was, I don't think he had a very good touch. But if you look at the replay, I think the Brazil player gets a slight touch and then it cannons back onto Watkins and just blazes over the bar. But it was all about his touch, really. If he'd got it right, I think it would have been a golden opportunity for him. Again, Ivan Toney's a completely different forward again. So you could argue he's probably more similar to Harry Kane in ways that he kind of likes to drop in. We know Watkins can play off that left-hand side. We've seen him do it in the past at Villa, obviously not this season. So I think he's an option off of that left, because he can make those runs in behind. He's also really good contributing defensively as well. So I think he's got options with Watkins, and I think that's something that probably Southgate will be thinking of. I wouldn't be against taking them both, to be honest. I think there's room for three strikers in there, and especially with some of the injury issues that we've had in the squad of late as well, you can't rule out somebody getting injured now between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, you mentioned how Watkins didn't really get the service, did he, in this game that he probably would have liked. I think most of the game we struggled to find that killer ball into him, into someone in the middle. And that was a frustrating element, I think, of the game for people watching. And I think a part of the reason for that is that Phil Foden wasn't really, like you say, in his best position. And in a game like this, I think Brazil must have earmarked Foden as somebody who could have really made a difference, him and Bellingham. And neither of them really got a foothold in the game. Why do you think that was? And is Foden sort of still that kind of key player on that side? Or do you think when Saka's in on the right, he'll move to the left maybe? What do you think is the best kind of situation for England going forward and how to get the best out of him?
I definitely think those players that you talk about, they definitely missed that support from out wide, from the full-back areas. As soon as Kyle Walker went off, even though Ezra Konsa came in and was one of the much better players, in my opinion, on the night, but what Walker and what Chilwell should be offering is an outlet and some link-up play down the flanks, and I think we missed that. If we've watched England, obviously, over the last year or so, Shaw's kind of made that place his own at left back and done really well, you know, obviously going forward. And I think that's something that we really lack to do, is just create that extra space with that overload on the flanks, which we struggle to do really in this game. Then obviously creates more space for the midfielders as well, and those that obviously like to make those late runs into the box. We look really out of sorts, and that's the concern for me, really, is we've got this, you know, this last game against Belgium on Tuesday, and we're a little bit uncertain, really, as to what our set first 11 is going to be.
Well, I think there's a reality check, isn't there, that this is still a friendly. Like, I don't think there was any reason for us to go full throttle. I think some fans want to see that, though, and that's the thing. We want to see a team of this talent trying to go for it, and a result against Brazil would have been a real morale boost, I think. And we haven't had many results like that against teams in the top 10 of the FIFA World Rankings. So I think as an England fan, it's a missed opportunity to really get people's juices going for this tournament coming forward, when actually all it's done for me is just made me feel, yeah, we've still got areas of weakness. I don't think I've come out of this feeling like, yeah, we're favourites now, you know. I don't think there's many countries better than us, even when we're at our most average. But it didn't blow me away in any part of the game. There was a couple of players who had decent sort of cameo performances. I was really impressed with Kobbie Mainoo when he came on. I thought he looked a lot more composed than Conor Gallagher probably did. And that's another question for me, the midfield trio, because obviously Rice and Bellingham are dead cert, aren't they, for England's midfield. And I've seen some people say that third berth in midfield is probably a free hit to an extent because of the quality of those two. And I have to disagree there. I think the balance between that midfield three is super important. And Gallagher didn't quite fit that bill for me. I don't think he enables either Rice or Bellingham to do what they do best. Whereas I think Mainoo, and this is my Man United bias completely aside, I think would do that because he literally operates wherever you want him to. My fear is, though, that Jordan Henderson will go straight back into that midfield three when he's fit. What's your thoughts on the midfield, Dave, after that?
Well, that's quite interesting, isn't it? Because you were saying before, this that kind of third midfield spot has become almost a bit of a luxury position, because we don't know if we've got this kind of specialist player available to us to be able to, and we kind of don't really know what we're missing. Like, we obviously, Southgate mentioned about the lack of number sixes, which is why obviously he brought Mainoo in, because he thought he could offer something there. Obviously, a lot of people are going to argue whether it's a little bit too early. He's obviously very young, still at 18 years of age. He's only played, 15 Premier League games, but you have to have a look at his performance throughout the season. I can only remember one game as a United fan. I think it was against Newcastle. And to be honest, the whole team was absolutely terrible. But I think he was still our best player on the pitch that day, which says a lot. He's actually performed really consistently. So I definitely think he can offer us something there. I think we've just got to be careful about overhyping a player who's still so young, even though for me and a lot of fans will tell you that he will live up to the hype, and he's a player who carries so much promise. And to have, I think the most impressive thing, as we've already mentioned, is to have that level headedness and that maturity at such a young age, and to be able to, I mean, there's a compilation going around, isn't there, of his 20 minutes against Brazil, and a lot of fans are just saying, you know, it's just a basic kind of video of some sideways backwards. You know, there's a really nice turn in there. I think he made an exceptional turn past Joao Gomez, didn't he? Wolves, it was just like he wasn't even there. I think it's just the calmness that he actually instills into the team. We've seen him do that to Man United. I think to do it in a team as bad as what United are, and to do it at such a young age, and to carry that sort of onus on your own at that age, is impressive in itself. So I think he deserves it. I think there's a lot of players out there who aren't in this England team who probably should be feel a little bit unlucky not to be given opportunity. I think a lot of people are saying Harvey Elliott should be with the senior team. I think one for me as well, I'm just going to say Kin Dewsbury Hall. If we're playing Conor Gallagher,
that's an interesting shout.
And Dewsbury Hall has been, he's been linked with United, hasn't he, in this last week, I think, and a couple of other really big clubs. There was a lot of uncertainty whether he was actually going to leave Leicester, but what he offers as a midfielder, he's got all-round package. He's really good in the press. He's got a lot of energy. He's great on the ball, technically really strong. He's got an eye for goal. He can create, he's got a pass in him. I think the only thing is, obviously, where there's room for more styles of that sort of player. Obviously, we already mentioned you've got the likes of James Maddison in there, who can't get a game, who can't get a run in this team. Obviously, Phil Foden, we're still trying to kind of find a place for him and whether we can create that sort of role for him without disrupting any other players' positions. It's really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I think for me, Foden's best position is on the left of Harry Kane, with Saka on the right, Bellingham behind. And then supporting that has to be Declan Rice and one other. And that's that one other that really dictates the balance, because Declan Rice is an underused asset, I think, for England as well sometimes. I think because Bellingham's so dominant, Rice doesn't really get the platform he deserves to go forward and be like a box-to-box, for example. We're relying on him for defensive work a lot more. And when England go to a double pivot, I think that's when fans start to think, you know, where's the positivity? Where's this talent being unleashed from the midfield onwards? That's frustrating.
I think what we've tried to do is, Mason Mount has obviously gone out of the team, hasn't he? And Bellingham sort of came in to replace Mount. But we're kind of trying to replace Mount's profile with Conor Gallagher. But then if you're bringing him into the team, you may as well just keep Mason Mount in there. Or you may as well, do you know what I mean? We're trying to piece the puzzle together. And I don't think we've found the answer yet. We've definitely not found the answer.
No. Well, I think the reason why Gareth Southgate tries to play a double pivot to some extent and have two sitting players isn't really to enable Jude Bellingham, really. I think it's more to protect the defence. I don't think he trusts our centre-backs. And I think this game kind of gave him reason to still continue not to trust our centre-backs. I think Harry Maguire didn't have his best game. I thought Lewis Dunk wasn't the best when he came on. And even Ben Chilwell on the left just looked short of match practice, didn't he? So defensively, I think we've got big question marks as well.
I don't think Gallagher's probably got the positional sort of discipline to be able to play that sort of role, though. Like he kind of gave them a bit of freedom in the press. Obviously, Gallagher and Bellingham, you know, you saw it in this game, actually, when Brazil actually beat it with ease on quite a few occasions. And then we're all at sixes and sevens and we were under pressure in transition. We were caught quite a few opportunities, didn't they? Really, they probably could have scored. We were probably a bit fortunate not to be behind before, obviously, we conceded that first goal. So I think, like I say, it's really difficult to read into it. I'm quite fascinated by what we're going to field though on Tuesday. I'm just wondering whether we're going to field a completely different lineup, and he just wants to see what other players, what they've got to offer. I think Maddison will get a game for sure. I think he deserves an opportunity, especially with how he played, especially the first half of the season for Spurs. And I think we've got to be careful, because a lot of these players, especially, we're talking obviously Ben Chilwell's not obviously played a lot of football coming back from injury. Obviously Maddison is the same. I think Southgate's probably been a little bit careful there, really, about how many minutes, and he's just trying to probably ease them in a little bit. Speaking of injuries, obviously there's been a few withdrawals, hasn't there, over the last week, and there's been a lot of controversy about people talking in the news, social media, about, you know, is it club over country? It seems to be
always, yeah.
Whether these are legitimate injuries and legitimate knocks, and whether on obviously there's a couple of really big games coming up at the top of the Premier League in the next couple of weeks, isn't there?
So cynical, Dave. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Bukayo Saka pulling out last minute. You could have probably put money on a City or an Arsenal player pulling out of the squad, couldn't you? Or even a Liverpool player. Even Kyle Walker's Erling injury Haaland. To an extent. Kyle Walker pulling up injured as well when he did. I don't know if Pep told him to do that and he's just kind of gone, yes, boss, I'll get myself out of the equation. But yeah, I think Walker's replacement, Ezri Konsa, you've already touched on his performance. He's probably the standout beneficiary from this game, I think. He really acquitted himself well, didn't he, on his debut and acclimatised to international football almost seamlessly. And again, try not to read too much into an international friendly. But if he's trying to make a name for himself in front of Gareth Southgate and to win his trust, I think the chance to replace Kyle Walker was the one. And I think he was up against Vinicius Junior, wasn't he, as well? Or was it Rodrigo on that side? And you just think to yourself, that's a really tough challenge for somebody to take
Vinicius,
on.
I think he dealt with.
Yeah. Either way, it's a tough gig for him to come into on his debut. I thought he did really well. And if Miles was here, he'd be singing his praises from the top of the agenda. But we've got to him eventually. And Konsa, I think for me, yeah, he's probably the one that came out best from this, don't you think?
Definitely. And I think, obviously, the way Villa actually play, I think it's this, he can offer us so much in this team, whether we decide to play, you know, three at the back and obviously play as a wing back. I think he's more than capable of doing that or playing as one of the third centre backs. He offers that sort of pace that which we've really actually valued in Kyle Walker, and what he's been able to give us is sort of like that third centre back in the past as well, which is, he's got that recovery pace, which is, you know, vital, especially because we just seem to get caught and break in transition quite a lot. Still not particularly, I don't think we feel very secure as a unit defensively at the minute, and we're still trying to figure out what the actual centre-back partnership is probably going to be as well. Because there's obviously other players that have come to the fore, like, you know, Jarrod Branthwaite, who didn't even get an opportunity in this game. Whether he'll look to give him an opportunity against Belgium is another thing. But I think, I thought he was great in this game. He actually won all majority of his duels. He came and dealt really well. I think the physical sort of, the physicality that he offers as well in that area is so strong. I think it's actually quite an underrated skill of his. I think he's just so powerful, is the frame that he's got. But the how he's come on, I think, in terms of his ball-playing skills as well. I mean, we saw it in this game.
100%.
Really comfortable on the ball. He went forward and just looked really comfortable for his, considering he's not really had any sort of experience on the international scene at all. I think I thought he was probably our best player on the night. I don't think it doesn't sound right. I think a lot of spectators, especially England fans, will be looking at the game and there probably won't be much positivity to take from it. But I thought it did him the world of good, and just how comfortable he looked in this game will give him so much confidence, I think.
I can almost hear dozens of Villa fans saying, "We told you so," nearby. Like, they, I think they have him down as the one, I think, to be a centre back partner. Because he was on a wide, wasn't he, in the defence to replace Walker naturally, and did well there too. So I think for me, it's the composure. I think in stark contrast to how Harry Maguire looked a little bit jittery at times, as he tends to, I think, when his confidence is a bit low, Konsa's composure and the way he dealt with some quite illustrious players coming at him looked like he'd been there for a while. You know, he didn't look like he was just introduced to the international game. And that is encouraging for me. I think just seeing him not have any doubts or any qualms about just stepping in and doing that, I think that bodes well as an option for the Euros and beyond, because he's still a young defender. And I think England need those kind of options in defence, because we're struggling to find partnerships, aren't we? We're struggling to find people to step in, and for too long we've had square pegs in round holes in positions, and I hate that. It feels like Konsa is somebody who could be quite versatile across the defence and fit in quite naturally, whether that be centre back or out on the right. I think that's a real asset for Gareth Southgate to have, don't you?
I'd like to see him get an opportunity in against Belgium, maybe with Branthwaite. Let's be honest, Stones is going to be starting, and then it will depend on the other centre back. I still think it'll be Stones, Maguire, to be honest, because let's be honest, it's Southgate. He likes his tried and tested. He likes his that sort of feeling of security and what he knows. It's I think it's to be expected, to be honest, but I think he deserves an opportunity, especially at centre back. And hopefully, if we can see a Konsa Branthwaite partnership, I think I think that would be a really, I think they complement each other really well.
True. I think if you're looking at form as well, they've both played pretty well this season. You know, it'd be a big benefit to England to have two players that are actually playing quite well for their clubs rather than just shoehorning players in on reputation. Not that I'm saying that ever happens, but when it does, it really shows us up, I think, in major tournaments. I'm really disappointed we lost to Brazil. I feel like even a draw would have been, you know, we wouldn't have been talking about it as a failed experiment. And I feel like when we lose a game like this, it does feel like a failed experiment, which is a shame because a few players made their debut. They'd have wanted to look back at their debut with a victory as well. And there's a few players who actually did all right too. And they've kind of been overshadowed by the nature of as just losing. So it's a bit of disappointment, really. Question for you then about the players in England's squad. Obviously, there's a few players we know will be on the plane to Germany, definite kind of squad members for Gareth Southgate. Are there any players that are on the fringes or that have been recently involved that aren't as much now that you're kind of worried about, that you're thinking they're probably not going to get in this squad that might be a surprise to anybody?
Well, I think majority of them have already kind of been left out, haven't they? Obviously, Raheem Sterling being one of them. I think it's more about Marcus Rashford.
Yeah.
Came on, didn't really make an impact at all. I think it was difficult circumstances when he came, which he came into the game. And to be honest, we were on the back foot. We were obviously a lot of changes have been made. I think there was a little bit of instability in that team, to be honest, anyway. And the balance kind of went out the window when the changes were made as well. But I think he'll go. I think he'll be in the squad. But whether he should be, probably not, to be honest.
Yeah. There's a few in that bracket, though.
I think the one thing that he does have going for him is we don't have many players on that left-hand side. I think Anthony Gordon is probably one of them that can create that bit of space in behind and actually make those runs in behind. We have a lot of players who like to drop, cut inside, obviously occupy those little spaces sort of behind the striker. So I think he has that going for him, and I think he will go. But I think he should be concerned that he's not going to start, because that's a possibility. There are a lot of players who probably should feel like they're getting an opportunity. We've talked about Ross Barkley.
That's true, yeah.
I think he should have had an opportunity. He's not. Let's be honest, he's not going to go now. But if he has an absolute blinder of the last 10 games of the season and the media get on Southgate's back like they did with Maynard, and he makes a reverse decision 24 hours later, says, you know, he's going to be in my squad, then that wouldn't surprise me either. I mean, there's still chances that we mentioned. There could be injuries. If Mason Mount gets some minutes at Man United, who knows, he might get him in there, because like you say, we've really lack, I think, bodies in midfield, particular profiles, which we've already mentioned.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned a few there that are unlucky enough to be featured now, like Ross Barkley. And that's why I find it strange that there's like one more friendly to go before the squad's decided, because there's so much football to be played, isn't there, across the season before the squad's actually announced, that there's a lot of players that might find themselves in a position to sort of say, I could be in this squad, but haven't been tested, like Ross Barkley. It's a bit of a weird one how much football has got to be played at club level that kind of puts the national team on the back burner for a bit, isn't it?
Here's a question for you. Do you think if Reece James had been fit and if Trippier was in form, if he was available, do you think he'd think about reverting to a back five?
Yeah, I think he's looking for any option or any way he can sort of provide defensive security and stability. And I think a back five, especially in the big games, always makes Southgate feel a bit more protected, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it makes sense to me, because you've got Konsa in there who can play as one of the third centre-backs. You've obviously that pace. They've still got Walker there. If, you know, fingers crossed he's fit for the summer as well. And then you've got Reece James, who, let's be honest, is far and away our best attacking fullback, wing back. And then Luke Shaw, who offers that quality going forward as well.
Yeah.
I think he would, to be honest. It wouldn't surprise me to see him play with three centre backs. And I wouldn't judge him for it, to be honest, because
no.
The way we looked defensively, the way we looked in this game, doesn't exactly fill me with confidence.
Well, you also mentioned how much of a like a decent role our fullbacks have played in previous tournaments, and we just haven't got a full set of fit fullbacks at the minute, have we, to be able to do that? But if we did have prime Luke Shaw, prime Trent Alexander-Arnold, or prime Kyle Walker all available to bomb down those flanks, it'd be an extra attacking dimension that we've actually used quite well in previous tournaments too. So, yeah, it's a different makeup of the squad this time. So it kind of forces his hand to play 4-3-3 almost, doesn't it? But I think that's the best position for England to be in. I think 4-3-3 is the most attacking way to get the best out of this team. It's just got to give them the right instructions. I feel like Gareth Southgate doesn't set up his team to kind of be like attacking or enterprising. Mm-hmm. If he does, it's not translating on the pitch. And these are the kind of Premier League and Champions League footballers. They can take instructions well. There's players that play for Pep Guardiola, for God's sake. So they know how to attack a certain way. I don't feel like Southgate's doing that with them right now, do you? I think he's exercising too much caution.
Yeah, I think we're flitting in and out of games. I think we have moments where periods, we've seen it in past tournaments, where we look really on top. Obviously, the game against Croatia, which, you know, I think everyone looks back to that one and think that was a massive missed opportunity. We absolutely dominated at the beginning of that game, and we had a period of really real sustained pressure. We just can't really seem to be able to have these performances consistently or be able to maintain that sort of pressure throughout the 90 minutes. And it does feel like we've not really that sort of team that has a control of games either. We don't really have the sort of midfield that's able to slow the game down, sort of dictate play, dictate the tempo, and play in the right moments. And that's what Southgate was talking about, obviously, when he was mentioning we have obviously lack a few number sixes. It's going to be his last tournament, because I don't see how much further it can go. And I don't actually know if he knows the answer to it. I don't know if he's got the answers. And we've questioned in the past about his in-game management, some of the decisions he's made in the past. Whatever happens, he's going to be able to hold his head high, because he's probably been our best performing coach in the last couple of decades, to be honest. You know, we've actually had a couple of really good tournaments, so I don't think you can judge him too harshly. I honestly believe in international football, probably with the exception of a couple of managers, Julian Nagelsmann, who's at the very beginning of his career, majority of managers are managers that have already done it at club level.
Yeah.
Have already experienced a lot, or already won a lot of things, and probably past their prime. Mm. And Miles has mentioned it before, is who do we go for if we don't have Southgate? Who's going to want the job? Who's going to want the England job? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think if this is his last tournament, it has to be like a final roll of the dice to win a trophy. And I think he kind of has to go kind of full throttle, and he's got nothing to lose. Like, just go out on a high. I think we'd respect him more if he did kind of try and use these players to go full on attack and, you know, throw caution to the wind, as opposed to playing safety first football. Because I think back to getting knocked out in Qatar against France, and we had so many opportunities to seize the game before we actually lost. And I look back on those games and think, if it had just instructed the players to play the way they play for their clubs, it would have been different. The Euros final against Italy, that's the best chance we've had in our lifetimes to win an international trophy. Why didn't we just go for it? Why did we let the game slip away from us and go to penalties? You know, whenever a game goes to penalties, nobody's got any kind of optimism, really, that England are going to pull through. So, yeah, there's missed opportunities, I think, for England during Southgate's tenure that they've been held back by his kind of caution. And I really hope that's not the case in the Euros this year.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, but, you know, the life being an England fan, we kind of come to expect what we've suffered all those years we've suffered, really. But yeah, I think that there are a lot of, you know, moments, particularly in the last couple of tournaments, where we thought, what if, you know, hindsight's a beautiful thing. So fingers crossed, it'll be a bit more adventurous in its play, but we'll see.
A couple more topics before we sign off for this week's quite limited pod. You know, we've got a lot out of England chat, haven't we, from this last half an hour or so. But before I talk about Endrick, Brazil's latest superstar, this stupid argument about England's flag on their shirt. What do you make of that? I'm surprised that's making headlines. Because on one hand, it's kind of inciting all the gammons to get really protective about the St. George's cross, which is weird. Mm-hmm. I always find that really odd to kind of go, that's our cross. But on the other hand, I kind of think, why have Nike even bothered doing it? Maybe for publicity, I don't know, but changing the nation's flag on the shirt, do they do that to any other country's kit? Probably not. Why England?
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I don't know. They were the ones that highlighted it, weren't they? They put it on social media saying, you know, an update to St. George's flag.
Update. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's just, I don't understand it. I'm not bothered. I really don't care. And I don't, the thing I don't like about it is it stirs up the things that we don't like to see on social media. I mean, I've seen some, you know, distasteful things and things that aren't right. But it just brings out all the prats on social media that you just don't like to give them the attention, and unfortunately it does.
I think Nike have done the same stunt they did with Mary Earps and not having the goalkeeper shirt. It's almost like they'll probably sell more now because it's more famous. I think that's their train of thought. And it's a very cynical way of thinking, but why else would you call it out and make an issue of it if it wasn't to stir up people's reaction, whether good or bad? Because like publicity is publicity to them, isn't it? But it's unnecessary, isn't it? And it just makes me feel as an England fan, like, well, we've got other things to talk about and focus on. Let's just forget about the kit.
If they'd not put the post on, would it have even got any attention? Would anyone have even been bothered?
No, because they're the ones that mentioned it as a playful twist on the flag, and that it's something about inclusive of everybody. And as soon as you start mentioning inclusivity, some people get angry at that, don't they? For some reason, like it's a negative thing. But hey ho, it is what it is.
It's been blown up, hasn't it? Another one of the things that have been blown up massively.
Let's finish the pod on Endrick then, the new teenage sensation, only 17, the youngest men's footballer to score at Wembley now, I think, isn't it, is the new record for him. He's been likened to a couple of Brazil legends, I think, to Romario, I've seen him likened to Pele even in the way he kind of acquits himself. He's a very different kind of player, I think, and he's still so young to kind of see what he could be. I've seen a few YouTube compilations of him at Palmeiras as well, and he does look like a complete forward, doesn't he? He's got potential. He took his goal really well. It ricocheted to him quite kindly. But under that kind of pressure, I thought he did really well.
Yeah, he could have had another one at the end of the game as well, which Pickford actually made a really good save. But yeah, it's another absolute young star that Brazil have managed to churn out. And he's obviously going to Real Madrid, isn't he? In the summer, I believe. And it's really going to be really interesting to see what happens there, because they've obviously got Rodrigo as well, who actually at Real Madrid probably doesn't get as much limelight as some of the other other attackers. I know there's talk of them getting rid of him if Mbappe comes in, which is really harsh, because I really like Rodrigo as a player. I think he's a really threatening attacker, and yeah, I think he looks really promising. He's got that sort of diminutive stature, hasn't he, Endrick, where it makes him so agile. It looks like he's really explosive, and his physique as well. He's absolutely stacked. Like he's massive.
Well,
like,
that translates into shooting power as well. I think the way he can get velocity on the ball is really impressive too. He's good in tight spaces. He's good when the balls play through as well. I think he's got a little bit of a turn of pace. He's an all round forward. But I think you're right. His diminutive stature, is only 5'8" as well. He's not like one that's going to be like dominating defenses, but he's been described as a bit of a pocket rocket by some people. And I think that's kind of his game, isn't it? To try and run rings around defenders and watch this space. He looks like an impressive prospect, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he's a little bit different to Vinicius Jr. I think Vinicius has got a little bit more flair about him. I think it's going to be one to watch and just be interesting to see how he develops over this next few years. I think it's another thing, isn't it? We love to hype up players so young, right, in the modern day game. But we just need to remember that these players are just so young. We've got so much time to develop. Not everyone's a Wayne Rooney or a Lionel Messi at 18 years of age, where they're arguably probably at the peak. I think Rooney's probably the best player I've ever seen at that sort of age. It just doesn't happen.
No, true.
So, we just need to give them time.
Well, as soon as he turns 18, he's being whisked off to Real Madrid. So, you know, you don't get much more pressure than that, do you, than another limelight of the Bernabeu. But fair play to him. He's a quality prospect. And yeah, this is probably the first of many for the national team as well. But that's it, all we've got time for this week's pod. Thank you for joining us on International Week, where it's not always the most kind of popular week to talk about football because there's not much going on. But I think England always generates conversation. So thank you for listening. Dave, thanks for joining me. See you soon.
See you soon.